Bruce Kuwabara, celebrated Canadian architect and the mind behind Agnes Reimagine, the new home of the Agnes Etherington Art Center, is this year's Francis K. Smith Lecturer in Canadian Art. In his talk, Catalyzing Change, Kuwabara presents several recent projects that explore the themes of art and community and the insights he gained working on Agnes Reimagined. Join us on Thursday, March 20th at 6 p.m. in Grant Hall for this exciting event. Tickets are free, but please register by visiting agnes.queensu.ca.
What does existence mean to you? Collective Reflections, Queen's University's anti-oppression magazine, invites you to share your voice for Volume 12, Existence. From identity and resilience to celebrating cultural heritage, Collective Reflections welcomes poetry, short stories, essays, and visual art that showcase your unique perspective. Submissions are open now and due February 9, 2025. Let your creativity shine and be a part of this powerful collection. For questions or to submit, check out the AMS Social Issues Commission Instagram at Social Issues Commission. Don't miss your chance to be featured in Collective Reflections, Volume 12.
You're listening to Close Reads on CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm Corey.
And I'm Madeline.
On Close Reads, we share and analyze creative writing by students here at Queen's. Tune in for Close Reads from close by.
Today, we'll be talking about something a little bit different. Growing Pains is a collaborative art exhibition and coalition of works in the Union Gallery by artists Samira Khan, Shamara Peart, Shanique Peart, and Alicia Udvari as part of the Twofold Residency. We'll be talking to Shamara about the exhibit and the residency in just a minute. Shamara Peart is a multidisciplinary artist and writer who lives in Cataraqui, Queenston. She is Jamaican-Canadian and uses she-they pronouns. After completing their master's degree in English literature at Queen's, she's been infiltrating different areas of Kingston's art scene. Her poems have been published in Room Magazine, Active Victoriana, and Arc Poetry, among others. Currently, she works as the Juvenis Managing Director with Blue Canoe Theatrical Productions, where she organizes a 10-day arts festival that occurs in the spring. With the ultimate goal of making the arts more accessible, their background in biology, creative writing, and theater motivates them to consider multiple perspectives. When not writing, she can be found watching a live performance with friends, caring for her houseplants, spending time with her cat Paparazzi, or doing crochet. Next, we'll be playing Often as the Autumn by Kaya Cotter, followed by an interview with Shamara.
In the deep dark woods, in the middle of the night, the rain was pouring heavy as if the sky were trying to dry its blackened eyes from crying. The leaves from the trees blew into the house where four shrill scream awoke them all. They grabbed their coats and rifles. When they got outside, what did they see? But a 10-foot shadow looming. They shot four times with shivering spines, and the grassy field went. Once the sun was high, they found their sheep, bloodied and broken, except for one who grazed in the sun, an omen of the autumn. 3 weeks passed and little was said. When another shrill scream pulled them all from their beds and to the muddy field running. Show yourself, they cried to the gloom. Show yourself and face us. We've one sheep left and winter's near. So leave us alone, kill it. The shadow turned round and revealed its face. Morbid and decaying, it rose to its feet and opened its mouth, and soon it began to speak. What makes you think you deserve any peace, or that nature should be gentle? Do not impose your human laws or prey upon my mental. The women knelt by the sheep laying dead, and they cried for all their losses. And the shadow came, and the shadow went, as often as the autumn. And the shadow came, and the shadow went, as often as the autumn.
Okay, we are now back. I'm sitting here with Shamara, and we're about to talk about the very exciting art exhibit, Growing Pains, which is now in the Union Gallery. Shamara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to ask about the exhibit, but also about the residency more generally. So Growing Pains is part of the twofold residency between Modern Fuel and the Union Gallery. Can you tell us about that residency and how you've been spending your time?
Yes. So in the summer of 2024, myself and three other BIPOC artists were selected to take part in a collaborative residency at two local art galleries in Kingston. I will say it was a really fun time. We had access to Union Gallery in July and Modern Fuel in August. Mm-hmm. You know, I still respect and trust them enough to be willing to give us keys for the place for the course of the month. But it really was a fun time. We all got to dive into new projects as well as like learn what it means to create art collaboratively with one another. And I will say that after that, it has been very frequent meetings trying to put together our current art exhibit that's up and just trying to figure out what life looks like after residency as well.
That's great. So you found that like the collaborative partnership that you built in the residency there is still very strong.
Oh, absolutely. It's superseded just the summer to the point where anytime any of us had any issues, whether it was related to pets or just like random life advice that we were interested in, the first thing that we would do is message the group chat just to make sure that we had each other's point of view. So I will say that one of the main things that I know myself and also the other three people were looking forward to was figuring out what it means to make art in conversation with other people. But there definitely is an element to community building that came from that residency as well.
Yeah, I love that. I'm interested in the idea of like art as community building. I wanted to talk about the connections that you kind of have been building between different mediums in this residency. So you're also a poet, but for this residency, you've produced both sculpture and collage. So I wanted to ask, do you find your artistic practice similar or different in these different mediums?
I would say I think they're definitely different. When it comes to writing, I don't sit down to start writing unless I know what it is that I want to say. Mm. So more often than not, I kind of think of any art that I make as a version of, storytelling. And when it comes to writing, I refuse to sit down unless I know, okay, like this is where I want to start. Where I go can vary, but I need to know, like, what story do I want to tell? Where do I want to start with that? Mm-hmm. Versus for the sculpture that I had made and for the collaging, I think those processes were more just doing. I think I had to figure out what I was doing as I started. I know for the web, where I intended to start and where I ended up were two very different things. I'd sketched out ideas of what I wanted to do, but I think a lot of that was practice-based and process-based as opposed to sort of drafting, which is what my process is for any kind of writing, whether it's poetry or novel writing or short story writing as well.
Yeah. Do you find that like the experience of being in the residency and having time really just to think about art allowed you to be more process oriented?
Absolutely. I think when you are, again, in community with other people who are in that sort of same vein, you aren't afraid to experiment and explore. And for me as well, like there was a completely new practice called printmaking that I hadn't even heard of, quite frankly, until I was not just talking with the other participants in the residency, but also talking with the directors of the art galleries, talking with the co-directors for our residency, mm-hmm. and they were talking about what it means to, in the case of printmaking, carve into like a metal plate and like submerge that in an acid bath, and what that means in terms of putting that on paper, mm-hmm. because it's as simple as you could have made a sketch on paper, but you didn't, right? And taking those additional steps for that process actually does add something to the final result. So I will say that there are a lot of things in that residency and just coming out of that in terms of process that I didn't even think about doing, nor would I have planned to do, unless I was in community with other people who are also just art-driven and arts-focused.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And the idea of choosing mediums that are more process-driven, like things that are more complicated, things that are longer, and like really sitting with the process, that's mm-hmm. something that's really interesting. Did you find that, like, being in a residency, of course, the goal is to produce an end result at the end. Did you find it difficult to balance that sort of process with the desire to create the final exhibit, or did you find that just being in that artistic community allowed you to focus on the art?
I will say it's a little bit of both. Like, I think when you're an artist, and this also applies as a writer, like, mm-hmm. you know you're going to have something done at the end. You know that it's going to be a finished poem. It's going to be a finished story. And if you're an artist, you know it's going to be a finished piece. What you don't know is what it's going to look like, right? And so I think going into the entire process, I knew I wanted something to be done, both for the end of the residency to show the community, but also for the exhibitions. But actually knowing what that was something that I needed other people to rely on, because sometimes you get it too into your own head about it, or if you're writing, in this case, because I did do writing for the residency as well, mm-hmm. Writing is more of a solitary project as well. So I think that there was an element to trying to figure out what the end product was going to look like that kind of delayed my start process, yeah. but kind of circling back and realizing, okay, it doesn't really matter what the process is in terms of the end. What matters is, like, I need to just start. And then that starting kind of kickstarts everything else into place as well for finishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've been talking a lot about, like, the different mediums and the processes that are specific to those mediums. Have you found that your understanding of, like, where the boundaries lie between written and visual art has shifted over the course of the residency?
Absolutely. I went into this, and there are a few visual poets that I had heard of and, honestly, that I had read before this process. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of, like, partially B.P. Nichol, I think, in terms of a Canadian poet who does visual art, but also just thinking about different writers who use any kind of written medium to play, honestly, and to experiment, right? And I know that there was a House of Leaves allusion there, and there was also elements to even Celine Knight's Dear Current Occupant, and for that novel that she'd written, it was more of a memoir, but she had, like, pictures of the 23 houses that she'd grown up moving around in. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there is an element to the entire process that forced me to kind of reconsider, are there strict boundaries when it comes to poetry and writing and visual art? How do those two things bridge? How can I bridge them? Because really and truly, the art that I create is whatever I want it to be. And I think once I realized that I needed to just experiment and see what came from that, everything became a little bit less freeing. And I really did enjoy the prospects of, like, play and how I could make that come to life on the page and also in a 3D space as well.
Yeah, I love the idea of play. For visual poetry, I always think of Obligations 2 by Layli Long Soldier, which is like a diamond of words, and there's kind of different paths through the poem, so to speak. I love the idea of, like, art as an experience and art as, like, something that you move through. And I think that like, visual art is something that literalizes that much more, because, of course, you're literally moving through it. I mean, your exhibit in the exhibition room, you literally are, like, entering the space with the art. Mm-hmm. But that is something that you can do with words as well. Like, that is something that is very possible with written language.
Oh, absolutely. I think that a lot of people, well, first of all, a lot of people don't want to engage with poetry because it can be a little bit too much abstraction. But I also think that there's an element to creative writing in general that is about play, and it is about pushing the boundaries of what you think is possible. And it's not as direct, I think, as a, like, if you're watching television or you have some other version of visual media, I think that allows immediate access to emotions. But when you have to, like, sit with the piece, whether, again, it's in a 3D space and it's printed on the wall, or whether it's splayed out in a diamond, there is an element to that kind of imaginative process that you kind of have to be willing to, like, buy into, right, and suspend mm-hmm. your disbelief for. So I think that it's fun to be able to experiment in that way.
Yeah, it is really fun to be able to think of art as experimentation. Mm-hmm. Returning to the exhibit a little bit more, mm-hmm. Because Growing Pains is a collaborative exhibit between yourself and the three other residents, did you see your various works as separate or more in conversation with each other?
That's a good question. I would say I think all of us have pieces that are in collaboration with one another, mm-hmm. but I think that we also all have pieces that are quite personal mm-hmm. and individual. So I know that a lot of Sumaira's inspiration are specific to her family and her mother's like diagnosis as well, and the way that she had to process that and also dealing with her own kids. Mm-hmm. And I know for Alicia, it was, what does it mean to be a new person and venture out into my career path after leaving school? You know, like, this is the art that motivates me, but what does it mean to have that exist outside of sort of an academy setting? Mm-hmm. And for Shanique as well, a lot of the photography that she did was very movement focused and movement based. And it was really interesting to see how she forced herself to slow down and capture a moment mm-hmm. because of the fact that all of the work that she does is movement centered. So I think that because it's like the idea is growing pains and we all sort of forced ourselves to consider a different perspective and a different way of thinking, there is art that is in communication with one another constantly. But I also think that we all have individual pieces that we included in the exhibit that's just personal, just a little bit of ourselves that we shared with the public.
Mm. Yeah, but also you were talking about like the collaborative process and kind of like making those artistic friendships, even though they're individual pieces, I guess they're all made while you're together. So there is still absolutely. An element of that like collaboration in them.
Exactly. It's yeah. still us working in communication with one another, yeah, even if they're that. Personal.
Yeah, I love that you've made this like artistic community. It sounds like it was a really great experience.
It really was, honestly. And it's really funny because I didn't go into the process thinking that at all. I just mm-hmm. was like, I want to make art and I want to make it outside of my house. Mm-hmm. And that spiraled into us planning so many events. And I will say that even in terms of the collaborative piece that we were doing, so the first thing that we had wanted to do was a puppet show mm-hmm. because Alicia was making puppets from scratch.
Oh, and yeah, after the puppet that's on the swing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And after he had decided that, I actually don't think we have enough time in 2 months to make multiple series of puppets. We'd pivoted, and that was going to be an art book. Mm-hmm. And we'd had someone come in, a local artist, to kind of give us the rundown of the process. And we were like, so we cannot make an art book together. And then that again pivoted into, well, now we're hoping to do a film screening because mm-hmm. one of the projects Shanique had done was a dance film. So I think it's really interesting as well to figure out when you are working in collaboration with other people, your ability to be flexible too.
Yeah, and the way that the art is always evolving as you as people are also kind of finding yourselves as artists.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Shamar, and thank you for sharing your work with us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Of course. You can visit Growing Pains in the Union Gallery until February 15th. So if you don't have Valentine's Day plans, an art gallery could be a fun Valentine's Day date. This has been Close Reads with Corey and Madeline on CFRC 101.9 FM. To take us out, we'll have Creature by Half Alive.
Inside of me and see that I am not afraid to walk inside the void like a kid inside a cave, discovering the patterns of my soul and where it's placed. I've been mapping many caverns, but it still feels like a maze. I know I'm made of clay, that's why. Blinded by imperfect form, but I will trust the artist molding me. I am creation, both haunted and holy, made in glory. Even the depths of the night cannot blind me when you guide me. Inside my heart and find a perilous ravine, carved within the beauty, the darkness in between. Standing in the balance of complete and incomplete, I identify the echo of what is and what will be. I know I'm made of clay, that's all. Blinded by imperfect form, I will trust the artist molding me. Inner rooms growing dim,
Sound reasonably glorious. Settle in to routine. Where are you? What does it mean? Settle down, you're feeling lost, you're getting stoned and kicking rocks.
I know that I walk if my northern attitude, oh, I was raised out in the cold. If the sun don't shine till the summertime, forgive my northern attitude, oh, I was raised on little light.
When I say beat, you say banter. Beat.
Banter.
Beat.
Banter.
When I say beat, you say banter. Beat.
Banter.
Beat. Join us every Thursday at 1 on CIC for your special time with your favorite nuclear family.
My name is Aiden.
And this is Zoa.
And you're listening to The Only Show.
Beat Banter.
On CFRC Radio.
Beat.
Banter.
Banter. Vibes. You know about vibes?
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
With me.
Tune in every Wednesday from 10 until 11 a.m. while I explore themes, atmospheres, or moods across genres and decades. Whether I'm scoring a scene or doing a genre deep dive, there will be something for everyone.
I'll give you another tune to help your appetite.
The mood.
With me.
On radio.
CFRC.
The best radio station we've ever heard.
On Saturday, March 8 at 7 p.m., join the Agnes Etherington Art Center as they bring back their popular series, Open Secret. In this third edition, the Agnes partners with New York Film Festival, Prismatic Ground, and its artistic director, Inay Prakash, for a screening of five short works by filmmakers exploring the gaps in their relationships to ancestral homelands, including the earth upon which Canada has imposed its borders. From Palestine to Algeria to Haiti to China, the faint outlines of nations dissolve beneath a vivid 16-millimeter overlay of memory and imagination. A Q&A with Prakash will follow the screenings. This event is free and takes place at the screening room. Save your spot today by visiting agnes.queensu.ca.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could volunteer with Canada's oldest campus radio station? Well, sign up to volunteer with CFRC 101.9 FM today. We're always looking for new volunteers, and we offer a free training program, so no experience in radio production is necessary. You can start your own radio show or podcast, contribute to our news collective, help us sort through music sent to us by record labels and artists, help plan events, record PSAs for us, and even more. Reach out to our programming manager, Alex Fernandez, via email at programs@cfrc.ca for more information, or visit our website at cfrc.ca/volunteer and sign up today.
Down the short set of stairs, join me, Grim, in the basement for my working knowledge of indie, experimental, post-punk, and electronic, every Wednesday from 10 until 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Get ready to press record.
CFRC 101.9 FM has new social media. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at CFRC Music and keep up with the latest announcements about our programming and projects. Follow us today at CFRC Music.
Thank you.
Everyone, and welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short historical tales blended with Indian classical and Western music. I'm your host, Simar Kaur, and it's an honor to accompany you on this journey of discovering the rich interweaving of music and history. Together, we will explore the stories, traditions, and timeless melodies that have shaped our understanding of this art form. Today's theme is all about instrumentals and orchestra, a celebration of the purest form of music where instruments speak louder than words. Before we dive into our short story of the day, let's set the mood with some beautiful instrumental renditions of popular songs. First up, immerse yourself in a flute version of Kal Ho Na Ho, its gentle tones capturing the essence of the song's emotional depth. Then, let the soulful sounds of the saxophone carry you through Dil Diyan Gallan as the melody sways and flows with warmth. Finally, we have a violin interpretation of Kaun Tujhe, where the strings add an intimate, heartfelt touch to the music. So, without further ado, enjoy. Now, with that beautiful mix of melodies, let's move on to today's story. The Toronto Symphony Orchestra's journey from local roots to global prestige. The Toronto Symphony Orchestra, or TSO, is more than just a pillar of Canada's classical music scene. It's a symbol of the country's cultural identity and global reach. Founded in 1906, the TSO has evolved from a modest regional ensemble into one of North America's most prominent orchestras, playing a crucial role in shaping Canada's classical musical landscape. Its journey mirrors the growth of Toronto itself, from a thriving city into a world-class cultural hub, and the orchestra has been there every step of the way. The TSO's early years were characterized by the challenges of establishing a consistent artistic vision. The city of Toronto was still young, its art scene not yet the dynamic force it is today. Yet, despite these humble beginnings, the orchestra's founders had an ambitious goal: to build an ensemble capable of playing alongside the finest in the world. Over the years, the TSO welcomed a series of remarkable conductors, including Sir Ernest Macmillan, who was instrumental in shaping the orchestra's identity and evaluating its international reputation. As Toronto transformed into a multicultural metropolis, the TSO began reflecting the city's diversity in its programming. One of the orchestra's most notable contributions has been its commitment to Canadian composers and musicians. The TSO has long championed Canadian music, giving a platform to composers like R. Murray Schafer, John Astacio, and Violet Archer, whose works have found their place on the global stage. Through the orchestra's advocacy for Canadian music, the TSO helped bring the voices of Canadian composers to an international audience, reinforcing the importance of homegrown talent in the classical music world. The TSO's collaborations with world-renowned guest conductors and soloists have also been a defining feature of its legacy. These partnerships have helped raise the TSO's stature, and the orchestra now performs regularly in prestigious venues such as Carnegie Hall in New York and the Royal Albert Hall in London. In recent decades, the TSO has embraced innovation, combining tradition with cutting-edge approaches to music making. One of the orchestra's most notable recent projects has been its involvement in community outreach and education. Through programs such as the TSO's Family Concerts and its Discovery Series, the orchestra has introduced new generations to the beauty of classical music. Additionally, the TSO's commitment to accessibility has seen it incorporate more diverse musical genres into its programming, including film scores, pop music, and collaborations with jazz artists, all of which have attracted broader audiences. One of the TSO's defining qualities is its dedication to excellence. Year after year, it has delivered world-class performances, from Beethoven symphonies to contemporary works by young composers, all while maintaining a deep connection to the community it serves. Its commitment to artistic integrity and exploration ensures that the TSO remains at the forefront of the global classical music scene. The Toronto Symphony Orchestra is also a cultural ambassador for Canada. Through its tours and collaborations with other international orchestras, the TSO has showcased Canada's rich cultural heritage and the country's growing role as a leader in the global classical music community. Its role in fostering dialogue through music, bridging cultural divides, and connecting people from all corners of the world is a testament to the power of orchestral music as a universal language. As the TSO continues to evolve, its journey remains intertwined with the cultural heartbeat of Toronto, a city that embraces both its history and its future. Whether on stage in Toronto's Roy Thompson Hall or on international tours, the orchestra's mission remains clear: to connect audiences with the transformative power of music and to elevate Canadian culture to the global stage. The Toronto Symphony Orchestra's legacy is one of pride, passion, and a deep dedication to the art form, ensuring that it will continue to inspire for generations to come.
The AMS Food Bank provides confidential and non-judgmental food options to members of the Queen's community in the most comfortable environment possible. The Food Bank helps to ensure that Queen's students can be healthy and productive as they pursue academic achievement and alleviates poverty amongst Queen's community members. We are open Monday to Friday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in room 105 of the Rideau Building. For entry into the Food Bank, we ask to see the sticker on the back of your student card to ensure you are a valid student. We have an amazing team of volunteers to welcome you and answer any questions you may have. To donate, you can e-transfer controller at ams.queensu.ca with the subject line AMS Food Bank Donation, or bring non-perishables to our location during the service hours. Also check out the Pay What You Can Peach Market, providing equal access changing hunger, in the new medical building for fresh soup and entrees on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. For any questions, please reach out to foodbank@ams.queensu.ca.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to six feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens. If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckitties.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
Any help you can offer Kendra's community kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral felines to rescue.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.